fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back returning again for another weekly look at the world of non-league football. Can you hear the silence? Unfortunately, Dave Anderson is not alongside me. Those of you on Twitter will have probably spotted that Thursday the 11th of March is in fact Dave Anderson's birthday. And as we all know, when you get to a certain age, doing too many exciting things in one day is just too much for one man to cope with. So Dave Anderson taking a well-deserved rest. He will be back with us hopefully next week and hopefully giving his forthright views as ever. As well as not having Dave alongside me in this virtual world that we operate in now, it's actually a tough show to put together this week, because usually we'd be covering ground gradings, we'd be covering promotion chasers, and even some of the runaway leaders that may have tied up promotion by this stage of the year. Instead, it's just still a waiting game. We still await news of whether Step 2 is null and void, or if a supplementary competition may happen or not. And recording this on a Thursday afternoon, I understand there may be a final meeting on that tomorrow, which is Friday, so by the time most people have listened to this, we may even know more for the weekend. But then that's another weekend that any of those potential games can't be played. We've already got Kettering, another club, announcing this week that they won't be part of the tournament. So it's looking less and less likely that there may be a Step 2 competition. But as we all know, stranger things have definitely happened in non-league in the past. We're also still waiting on the ratification of everything else by the FA. Step 3 to 6 curtailment, the potential of step 5 to 6 restructuring taking place, and even when the changes in the government roadmap stages will actually, what they'll mean to football at non-elite level. I've chased and I've got nice polite replies, which given previous periods of silence is perhaps something to be grateful for, but all who have had this week is a confirmation that the government rules say the 17th of May is the earliest any crowds are likely, and hospitality from the 12th of April will all have to be outside, drinks served with food, and everybody has to be seated. That's not really likely to be able to happen and be able to watch non-league football within a ground. So that's not looking good. That may then end I know certain leagues have already announced that because of that, it's unlikely now that they'll host any tournaments, and we're just looking forward to the new season again. We've also as I was about to record or actually re-record this opener, we've got news from the FA of the dates for the non-league finals day, both for this year's non-league finals day and last year's non-league finals day. We're making progress, but only limited fans at this year's final, and behind closed doors for last year's final. But we are getting there. We can see some light at the end of the tunnel. I just don't know how long this tunnel is. It's sad news this week as well that Stowmarket Town have had to withdraw from the FA Vias for financial reasons, and there's going to be more and more clubs on the edge and just hoping that they can get through to the summer and through to next season, when there should be hopefully some more revenue streams in, but still not the revenue streams that they have been relied upon in previous seasons. Good news we will feature this week, because we just want to do something a little bit different. We'll speak to a chairman that... it sounds like he may be in a difficult position, but he's honest. He understands that he needs to make sure that his club gets through to next season and survives for the coming years to come, and not just making the most of the next few weeks, because we're all desperate for football. And we'll also speak to somebody who's trying to bring together the brains or the success stories of non-league and get them to share their stories and share their insights and hopefully help develop the talent of future Premier League stars, but coming from the non-league world. So plenty to get on with. I appreciate your support, and I appreciate you listening. Share it if you can, if you want to. Let's get matters underway. If you're charged with running a non-league football club at the moment, it's a tough old business. It's hard before all this COVID stuff happened, but with two abandoned seasons and a massive downturn in income, that's made the uphill incline even steeper. Add to that the mix of a resignation of your successful manager and the good chance you could be potentially homeless in the near future as a club. And I actually wasn't that surprised that our next guest didn't immediately return my call this week. But I am pleased to say, however, that true to form, the man he is, he did reply. And here he is with us, fronting up everything that's thrown at him, which I think it must be part of the CV for a football chairman. It's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Chairman at Whiteley Football Club, Mark Coote.
Jim.
It's a long old intro. It was a long old intro, but I just wanted to sort of try and cover everything. Yeah, news this week that Harry Hudson resigned after three seasons at the club, which I know in itself would have been hard and difficult to deal with. But more worryingly for me, the news of the club's future at Church Road. What's happened and where are we now?
Well, nothing's really changed in as much as we've got a lease, a 25-year lease, with option to renew or extend every 2 years. And it just happens to be this year. So, for all intents and purposes, we're going to continue with the lease. Our biggest problem is the new landlord. We can't really get any of his intentions or what their intentions are with whether they want a first team there, whether they want to continue as a football club. That's the only difficulty at the moment, is we don't really know what they want. Mm. But from the football club's point of view, we're gear up. We've put our application into the league for next season, which I think we've already submitted. I think it has to be in by the 14th of March. Management-wise, well, 20 years I've been a chairman, Tim. I think every 3 years, I think I've had a new manager. This year's a bit unprecedented because, I've never been asked in March from a manager, is what we're going to do next season, because we're still now fighting either relegation or promotion. So it's a bit unprecedented, being asked questions now. But I understand where Harry was coming from, because he's a busy guy with his academy. He's done fantastic for us, Tim, I have to say. He's done everything that we wanted. I wanted a new young manager. He came in. He's brought in an array of decent players. I think three of the players have probably moved on to professional football. So, yes, it was disappointing when he said that, he felt it was time for him possibly to stand down. He was asking for commitments from me, rightly so. But I couldn't give him commitments. I couldn't give commitments in March any other season. So certainly, what's gone on this last year, Tim, I can't be... Because one thing I have done over that my 20 years is if I've made a commitment, I've fulfilled it with a manager or a player. And I don't want to be in a position now when I really can't make a commitment to make a commitment and then say to me in 2 months' time, look, Harry, I'm sorry, the funding's not coming in, football's not continuing, or it's going to be delayed, et cetera, and then have to withdraw whatever my commitment. That's then held him back because he's an ambitious lad. And he's got the potential to move on. And I wouldn't want to stand in his way for that. So, yes, disappointing, but maybe expected a little bit under the circumstances.
Yeah, I think uncertainty is probably the key word, isn't it? It's certainly, we find ourselves week in, week out, we'll say something and then we have to cover ourselves because that might not be the case. If we record this on a Thursday evening. By Friday morning, it might be completely out of date, or we might still be hanging on 3 weeks after, like we are at the moment with the FA ratification on steps 3 to 6. We know the season's finished, but it's still not been rubber stamped. And until that's rubber stamped, you can't make decisions on anything.
Well, that's what I said to Harry, really. You've got to make a decision based around what you want to do. What's right for you? I don't want you to hang on waiting for me to make a decision. They're the conversations we've had over the last few weeks. And I think he finally come to the decision on, I think it was Monday, that, it's time for him to step down. Also, it gives me the opportunity, not that I need it at the moment, it gives us the opportunity to start looking, for a new management team. But again, that's not something we'll look at until end of April. And I thought, Jim, I'd imagine, you know, because I can't commit to anybody. You know, the club can't commit to any management team what's going to happen next season. And with the little bit of the lease going on with the new landlord, you know, so we can't commit to anything. So Harry sort of made the decision, which is right for him, and I'll back him on it.
Yep. So in terms of the lease, then the club is secure. You've got somewhere to play next year, and you've basically taken up that option to carry on then.
Yeah, I mean, other than the landlord withdrawing the lease themselves, which would be disappointing, we continue. There's no real change. You know, we've just got to be careful now. If we continue, we're committed to 2 years. And that's 2 years of rent that if anything goes wrong, not just with Whiteley Football Club, but any non-league football club out there that financially are in sort of difficulties. And I have to say, we're not in financial difficulties. You know, yes, we've got creditors, same as any football club, but they are manageable. You know, if we can get this relationship going with the landlord and a bit of help from him, then, you know, Whiteley Football Club's fine. Mm. But it's just that uncertainty, what's going to happen from now moving forward. We commit to another 2 years. That's 2 years of rent we're going to have to pay. And if there's no football, someone's got to pay that.
Yeah. Well, and I think these must be conversations that chairman up and down the land are having. You know, yeah. Or maybe they're not. Maybe there's certain people that I know that are probably just sat there stewing, and they don't want to be honest with themselves and honest with the people around them. And I think, you know, as you've been involved for 20 odd years. I've been involved for 20 odd years for my club because we're fans. That's why we're there, and that's the big thing that steers all our decisions.
Yeah.
So you're not going to commit your club to something that will overcommit it, so that you'll have two great years and then you won't be here for the rest of history.
Well, that is it. I mean, when I took over as chairman, I think it was 2002, so it's not quite 20 years. Having been there for 5 years before as a coach and managing, etc., my three sons played for the club. So I had a good connection. The club was in financial difficulty, and I was approached by the then chairman, Tony Debris, who sadly passed away at Christmas. Could I help? Would I help? And it moved on from there. And I think what happens is you get embroiled in something that it becomes more than just a hobby. It just grabs you. And I'm not the only man or person all around the country. There's chairmen, secretaries, treasurers, stewards. You just get embroiled in something. And the football club's meant a lot to me over the years. As I say, my three sons have played there, so I've had a good connection. But every year has been a financial battle. I've put endless of thousands of pounds into that football club. My choice. And it's kept us to where we are today. And I've done it without being reckless. We only play within our means financially, hence why we're still here. Because realistically, in the early 2000s, we were in dire straits. Not just me, the help of other sponsors and business people that have helped the club, and also the fans and other committee members. So we've got to this stage now, and we've just gone through this. We're going through, we can't say we've been through it because we're still going through it, this lockdown, restrictions and everything. So we've got to ensure that we don't hemorrhage money for the sake of it, for our hearts to rule, you know, where we are, you know, because that sometimes, I think you alluded to it, that some chairmen or owners, they do bury their head a little bit. They think it'll be all right, and we'll worry about it when it all happens, or they spend money they don't have. And then, you know, the consequences, you know, they get in a hardship. Well, we don't really want that at Whiteley, and I think we'll be all right. I generally think we'll be all right.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say that I think we're lucky as a sport that there has been help from government, from local authorities, from the Football Foundation, but it's help, and it's still there's still a shortfall because clubs haven't got the multiple income streams. And I know even a club like yours is so dependent on that community structure and people coming in on a regular basis into the clubhouse and driving, not necessarily, spending money over a bar, but it's all of that builds the club and builds your profile so that it even helps bring in sponsors in. And you haven't got that at the moment. Nick Robinson, actually, chairman of the Eastmead League that you play in, he mentioned it last week. One of his concerns is that people will forget about how wonderful non-league football is. You know, we've all been there and we get out of the habit. And that's where we need to make sure that the clubs like yours, like mine, like hundreds up and down the country, survive, but survive in the right way. And it is about football, but it's also about the community.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's changed, though, Tim. Massively changed non-league football from the day... Well, I've been in and around it for 40-odd years, but certainly the last 20 years, it's... You know, if a bulb went or a bit of electrics went, you had a player who would do it, pop round and do it. If the grass needed cutting, one of the fans would come round with his lawnmower and he'll cut a bit of grass or do a repair. Now everything has to be paid for. There's very few clubs that have enough volunteers. So the costs have gone up generally. And the fan base hasn't. You know, we probably get an average of 120, 130 to 100 games, depending who you're playing and how big the games. Now, that gate we see on its own doesn't pay for everything around a football club. So you do rely on that second spend, which is the bar, hamburgers, and that side of it. But more so, it's sponsors. And my concern with now is the sponsors will probably still want a sponsor, but will they be able to financially? As much as they'd like to, I'm a businessman. I know what it's like. Our sponsorship deals, I've been sponsoring different things for many years. It hasn't over affected my business because we've been working all the way through it. But we're still thinking, we better not,
We'll be a bit more cautious.
Let's not commit now. And I think that's where I think the fan base will continue because I think a lot of people are now walking away from professional football, particularly fans. I think, the cost is one of it. The cost is driving it, obviously. People are not going to be able to afford their season tickets at Man United, Chelsea, Crystal Palace. They're just not going to afford it. But they love football. So hopefully non-league football will draw them in. It certainly did. Say the only real revenue add was sort of September, wasn't it? September, October last year with the league and the FA Cup. Now, our crowds probably went up 50, 60% because they had nowhere else to go. Some of them were discontented with professional football anyway. But they come and watched us play, or non-league football. So I'm not sure the fans will be a problem. I think we might be all right there. It's just whether we can get the financial support from the leagues or the FA and from sponsorships.
Yeah.
That's my main concern, is I don't think the money will be there, certainly from sponsors.
You also mentioned volunteers there, and it's we've been on about this for 15 years on this show. I am still one of the youngest people in a boardroom whenever I walk in there, I tend to hobble in now because I'm more nearer the age of everybody else in there. But we need to spend this time. We spoke with Nick Robinson. We spoke with Mark from the Northern Premier League as well a couple of weeks back. It's important now that clubs spend this time to plan their way forward into next season, both at league level, but I'd also hope at FA level as well. We need some help to recruit volunteers so that they understand, we can do as much as we like advertising in the local press, but it's not really going to work. It needs something from a higher level to impress on these people that there is good stuff going on at non-league level, and you could an hour a week every week from one person would make such a difference to how clubs could run.
It can do.
Make them more efficient for one.
Yeah, I think there's two elements to that. There's the football clubs that run the whole stadium, i.e. they get the revenue from the bars, you know, the second spends of the bars and everything else. But there's also the football clubs that just rent the ground. So they possibly only receive gate money and sponsorships and whatever else they do. So there's sort of two elements to the different types of football clubs in non-league. Because not every non-league club owns its ground, as we don't either now. So it's trying to get the balance. And as we keep alluding to it, we can't plan. How do you plan when the whole country can't plan? What do we do? I mean, if someone says, what are you going to do next season? Yeah, I really don't know. Maybe this time 2 years ago, I'd have an idea of where we're going to be going next season. But at the moment, I've no idea.
Well, I've been badgering the FA to, you know, that they need to give some clarity to football clubs, because and they have to an extent. I think today that an email has gone out to people just saying, yeah, oh, we'll follow government guidelines.
Wow. Well,
but I like to think that one job that we can do on this show and through the non-league paper is to educate people, and people need to understand that football's not going to go back to what it was 2 years ago immediately. You know, so we're going to have social restrictions. We're going to have minimum, if we are allowed bars open, there's going to be restrictions on that, and it's going to be minimum income streams that clubs are going to rely on. So people need to be creative, but they also need to be supportive as well. So I know fans are desperate to get back. We're all desperate to watch some football. You know, I've even conceded and got my Sky subscription so I could watch some football on the telly. And I have to say, I'm so much looking forward to watching a non-league game, because you can see that the passion's not there that we enjoy week in, week out. But I think people need to understand that we are all going to need to work together to make this work.
Yeah, I mean, it's never been any different from that point of view. We've always needed that, haven't we? But I think more so than ever, with revenue opportunities getting smaller, because as you say, with the restrictions, we don't know how far these restrictions are going to continue. Are you going to still need to be 2 metre distancing? Are you going to be able to stand at a bar and have a drink? You know, that puts people off, you know, because the whole idea of having a drink after a game of football is that socialising and talking about a game. Now, if you can't do that, or you can only do it in groups of fours, there's no encouragement for anyone to go into a bar. So you're going to lose that support straight away. In the stadium, again, I don't know if there's going to be restrictions there. Are they still going to have to maintain groups of six, social distancing? And will that restrict the numbers you can get in the gate? You know, who knows? So there is all that uncertainty knocking about, Tim. So, you know, when you talk about planning, what can you really plan? And in fairness to the FA, I think they're doing everything they can, because they're being guided, as they say, by the government. So what can they do for us if they don't know what they're allowed to do, other than give us money? You know, which is always welcome.
They can give us money, and we need to be more patient.
I think so, yeah.
So
yeah, it's difficult. It's very difficult to, but, you know, but it's very hard to be upbeat. You know, I want to sit here and go, we've lost our manager, which is a shame. You know, he's done fantastic. I've got a new team coming in. We're going to do it. Can't.
You've stolen my next question. Actually, I was going to say you've been involved for all these number of years, but the last 2 years must have knocked the stuffing out of you. Really, I mean, is it hard to keep motivating yourself and keep, because it's not only you're not only motivating yourself. If you're not motivated, then the rest of the club would wither and sort of it. That's part one of your hats that you have to wear.
Yeah, pretty much. It's it does drain you. It's the uncertainty that's draining. You know, if someone said to me last July, look, nothing's going to happen for a year, but you will definitely come back on the 1st of August, my optimism would possibly still be there. But because we really don't, even now, we don't know. I mean, I think that, as I said earlier, I think they're talking about August the 14th or something. Is it? I don't know the exact date. Is it? Is it going to be then?
Well, one of my concerns, and I've raised this before, and it sounds silly, but it does impact at steps 3, 4 and below. Yeah. It's that we've got lots of people that haven't been on holiday. They're about to be told that they can go on holiday. Yeah. How do you tell then one of your players whose wife is desperate for him and the kids to go away on a holiday, and he's, sorry, Chairman, I can't make the start of the season because we're having the first family holiday in 2 years. You know, where do you, and then you get 3 or 4 of those coming to you. That's the uncertainty that at the back of your mind, one of those things has got to be ticking along, and you've got to be thinking about these.
Yeah. Also, another thing we need to bear in mind is the government have been very generous on the furlough. Not that I want to go into politics, but they've been very generous on the furlough. And there's a lot of businesses that are still maybe not trading fully, but might be trading or standing there ready to trade. Now, when furlough ends, if them companies can no longer trade, there's going to be a lot of people unemployed because they're not going to be able to stay on furlough because furlough's ended. And these companies aren't going to, so there's going to be a lot of unemployment out there. I hope not, but that's the way I think it's going because it hasn't hit us yet because there's a lot of people on furlough. These businesses technically are still trading. They're still out there, particularly hospitality, restaurants and bars. So what happens at the end of that furlough when these people are out of work? You know, they're not going to come to football matches because they can't afford to go to fans. The players themselves are going to be playing for money and there's going to be no money there. You know, so there's so many scenarios to this situation that...
And I guess at non-league level, we rely so much on players being able to go to their boss and say, is it right if I finish at 3 on a Tuesday so I can make it round the M25? I remember some of those journeys from Reading round to Whiteleaf years ago. It could take you half a day. So, but employers aren't going to be able to be that generous or flexible either for players to get off work.
No, exactly that. And, there's so many different scenarios that could happen. And as soon as you put different scenarios into a situation, how can you plan? What do you do? Do you plan for, we'll have plan A, plan B, plan C. You know, you wouldn't know where you are with it. So I think from our point of view as a club, we're sitting tight. We're waiting for news from both the government to see if the restrictions are going to be lifted gradually as they've planned. That will filter down into the FA. That will filter down into us to know where we're actually going to be aiming for next season. And then we can then take it serious and go, right, this is where we need to be to move forward. You know, I'm optimistic that we'll be around next season. And, who knows, it could turn out to be the best season next season, couldn't it?
It could. always dream, dare to dream. Optimistic and realistic, I love. Mark, it's great to get you on, but also great to know that the club's in good form. Things could always be better, I'm sure, but we wish you well with a hunt for a new manager whenever that comes about, and with getting Whitecliff Football Club back on the map. And
let's hope so. Yes, I look forward to it.
Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football.
Thank you for your time, Tim. Appreciate it.
So what with lockdown and no football across most of non-league, we all need a bit of a lift. And our next guest aims to help provide a little inspiration this week. We're recording this on Thursday evening. And on Friday evening, he helps host, via the Jason Roberts Foundation, an evening of virtual Q&As with some of the biggest names who have benefited from their dreams coming true, moving from non-league to the Premier League. To tell us more, welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Otis Roberts.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, Otis. I mean, what's involved? What's it all about? It's bringing together some of the big names, big brains of non-league success, and trying to share their wealth of knowledge, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we thought of it a couple of weeks ago. Just as we've come out into this roadmap, coming back into football, you know, everyone suffered from what's going on with the pandemic. But, you know, I've been talking to quite a lot of non-league players, and they've suffered greatly and immensely from it, for the stop-start season. They don't have all of the, you know, the money that goes with the bigger clubs that, you know, able to get football into to the households and stuff like that. So we just thought that, you know, coming into this period now, it'd be nice to give people a lift who are playing across the pyramid and give them access to these players who have kindly decided to come on.
Well, I mean, we talk to players week in, week out. There's various new things starting up across social media over the summer, over the last 18 months, I guess. But, I mean, you really have brought together the golden boys here. Yeah, Jason Roberts, Nathan Ellington, Jamie Mackey, DJ Campbell and Barry Fry. There's going to be a few stories there.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, I mean, you know, the stories, I mean, for people that kind of know the players who have kind of gone before, there, you know, there must be some of them in their 40s now. And then Barry, you know, he's a sort of veteran of non-league and now obviously at Peterborough. But I think it's just, you know, five different characters, different journeys, different ways that they've come from non-league, from humble beginnings and, you know, played at the top level. But I think the audiences across the board will talk a little bit about, you know, their journeys, you know, some of the resilience that they had to go through to do it, some of the influential characters, managers and teammates that helped them along the way. And also from a club point of view, someone like Barry, who, you know, was able to sell a load of players from Barnet back in the day, you know, including your Andy Clarks and, you know, your Gary Balls and your Dave Reed, and Ed Steen, and certain people that have come that maybe the players playing today would not have known or have access to. So it's just really giving them that wealth of knowledge. And, you know, whoever's playing now or whoever's in football, in non-league football, can take something from five of them.
Yeah, I think it's important that you say that, because there are probably names that people playing today or even some of their parents of those playing today, they're names that people will recognise, but they don't necessarily understand or know their backstory, you know, how Terry Brown took a chance on Jason to get him back in love with the game at Hayes, because Cyril Regis had a word. And these are the sort of stories that I think need to become folklore of non-league to keep that inspiration going of the players, for the players for the future.
100%. And, you know, like I said, you know, you see up and down the country, there's loads of different situations. You know, some of the situations you might have a player that is 26 years old playing at the top of the non-league pyramid, has a chance to go pro, but you've got a job as well, and you've got a dilemma. I mean, there's so many different, you know, angles from this. You know, players who have dropped out the league, dropped out Premier League clubs, and, you know, and gone back again, and then come back again. Do you know what I mean? So I think across the board, you know, it'd be really interesting to hear the stories. And really what we want to do is go straight to the floor and get people asking questions and, you know, and getting that wealth of knowledge that might be able to help someone along the way.
And I think that's important for me. That's the thing that grabbed me. That it's not just a show of aging footballers telling their stories. This is going to be engaging and give the audience, the players, managers, parents, fans, the chance to ask questions and get involved and learn for themselves and maybe make themselves better players.
100%. I mean, you so rightly said then, it's not just, I mean, you're talking about parents of young players. You know, do you go to a club under 20, under 18s, or do you take a chance and go into non-league and play very early? Do you know what I mean? There's so many different scenarios. And I think, you know, hopefully you get a good audience and it be pre-recorded anyway for those who've missed it. But I think, you know, there'll be something for everyone in there that you can take away and say, you know, maybe I didn't know all these players' journeys. But, you know, it's not just going to be the players talking at an audience with all their stories and journeys. You can kind of Google some of that. What we want is people who have an interest, who are in that zone, to come on and speak to these players. And, you know, you might ask a question of Jason that you might not ask of Mackie. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, when you see the engagement before, and I'm glad that you guys have let us come on to your platform. I mean, I still buy the paper. You know, it's very informative. And we forget that non-league makes up the breadth of football. You know, only very few make it across the leagues up into the top flight. So you're dealing with the masses here. And hopefully, I know we haven't started the call yet. I know I'm going to learn a lot more from being on there. So, looking forward to it.
So how can people get involved? It's tomorrow night. It's Friday, 12th of March. 12th of March already. Friday the 12th of March, 7 o'clock. But how can people get there? It's a virtual thing.
Yeah. So I think tomorrow we'll send the link out. You know, we know that if we just went to the clubs, we'd be bombarded with some of just, you know, the clubs that they've played for. But, you know, we really want the like you say, the players, the fans, the parents. Do you know what I mean? We really want them on there. So it'll be the link will be widely available. Some of it's gone out already via a link. And on our Twitter and Instagram, you know, if you request it, we will direct message you the link also. So I think by tomorrow it'll be out there in the public domain if you haven't got it already and you have a real interest in coming on and contributing. You know, because like I said before, we'll have a chat, you know, just kind of go over a few of the journeys. But then, you know, like some of the evening with that we've done in the last 3 months during lockdown, we go straight onto the floor and get people's opinions and people's questions and try to answer them as much as possible. The session could go longer. You know, if everyone's enjoying it, we'll make it longer and we'll try and answer as many as we can.
Oh yeah, so we'll be sharing the links on social media as well for people to get involved and get all the information they need. Obviously, this is just one of the number of initiatives you mentioned there, the events that you've already had this year with players. One of the number of initiatives from the Jason Roberts Foundation, it's just trying to keep people connected at this difficult time and part of the football community we all love.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, we started with Andy Cole a couple of months ago, who's a friend of the foundation, you know, he's a patron, and has worked on our programs both in London and Grenada. We started with Andy Cole, we had Heskey on, but what we wanted to do really was just to go a little bit deeper into the, you know, not just the questions that we all know, do you know what I mean? Just football questions. We wanted to go into, you know, who is Emil Heskey? Where is he from? What's his heritage? Do you know what I mean? Just go a little bit deeper into, you know, what is he doing now? And just kind of give that interactive insight where people, where a young person can get on that phone and, you know, he's in the room and he can ask questions and, you know what I mean, slightly off key, but, you know, they can ask questions. So we've done that. You know, and this one, you know, we're probably just through some of the interest, we'll probably do another one in a week's time or so, just before we go back on the 29th, because we've got another 4 or 5 non-league players that wish to do this. Do you know what I mean? I couldn't fit them on to this one because, you know, then there'd be too many. But we want to do that. And then I think on the 24th, we have one with Mark Bright, which is, you know, an interesting book that's just come out from him, which is Foster Care to Footballer. So, yeah, we're just kind of, you know, reviewing some books, bringing out some nostalgia and also looking at the heritage and bringing back some of the players from yesterday and giving them a platform to give some knowledge to those who need it.
And that's what the Non-League Football Show is all about, and the Non-League Paper as well. It's educating the masses. And we appreciate your time, Otis. We'll be sharing the link, and hopefully as many of our audiences can follow and join in with a Friday night session. But until then, thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
So let's round up the rest of the week's non-league news. It's back on over to virtual non-league paper towers. And welcome back to the Non-League Football Show to senior writer David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me. Good to be back.
Well, it wouldn't be Thursday without speaking to yourself and hearing your dulcet tones. An interesting week. We seem to be getting busier without more football. Two changes in management a firm fixture coming in as well. So there's two changes in management in the National League. Do Jimmy Shan released from his duties at Solihull Moors after, well, quite a hefty home defeat to Stockport County. And then former Moors manager Tim Flowers has parted company from Barnet too. I mean, it's been suggested to me. Are the same link, do you think?
Yeah, initially it looked like it could be that, of course. As you're alluding to, Tim Flowers was at Solihull Moors last season. He obviously took them into the playoffs the previous season, having taken over from Mark Yates, who moved on to Macclesfield in the Football League at that time. But as it happens, Mark Yates, who is the current Stourbridge manager, has now taken over on a temporary basis until the end of the season at Solihull, and he's taken with him his assistant Neil Howarth from Stourbridge. So yeah, I mean, it looks like there won't be a return for Tim Flowers at Solihull Moors at the moment, but a return nonetheless for Mark Yates at the club. So which is sort of an interesting dynamic, really. I suppose it's sort of, yeah, you know, sorry, sort of the situation that the pandemic can throw up when, you know, obviously Stourbridge season has been curtailed, and effectively Mark Yates wouldn't be doing anything really for the next few months of the season. And, but obviously that opportunity has come up, and he's gone in there to try and sort of steer Solihull back up towards the playoffs. You know, you do wonder what might happen if, you know, it goes very well and they get into the playoffs. You know, it might then sort of be a difficult decision, really. I think probably in terms of whether he sort of stays there or goes back to Stourbridge and allowed him to take this opportunity. So yeah, want to keep an eye on that. But I suppose, yeah, in terms of the changes that the clubs have made in terms of the managers, it's obviously, you know, I don't think sort of a massive surprise at Barnet. Obviously, Tim Flowers went in there after Peter Beadle, but he's just not been able to turn it round. You know, he said in his parting statement yesterday how, you know, he's sort of tried everything, he's brought players in, and it sort of hasn't happened really. You know, I think that, you know, makes Tim Flowers a bad manager. It's, you know, Tim Flowers doesn't forget how to manage it, you know, it just hasn't worked, and that happens really. Particularly sort of when you go into sort of a club that's already struggling, it can be difficult to turn it around. And yeah, it's just not happened for him really. So yeah, Barnet needs their third manager of the season now, which I think once you get into this sort of stage, you know, you're very much sort of looking at relegation really. I don't think sort of any club that goes at that point three managers in a season sort of generally stays up. Of course they may well just stay up by virtue of there being no relegation at all from the National League. In Solihull's case with Jimmy Shan, a shame for him. He's a very sort of highly regarded in the coaching world when he was appointed there and for what he's done previously. They just struggled for that consistency, really. They had some really good results and some bad, and it was just finding that consistency. At the start of the season, they were sort of putting wins together back to back, and it was going in the right direction, but it's just sort of been a struggle sort of since then, really. And obviously the club have made that decision to make a change. So we'll see how that pays off for them. I mean, you know, the league table is sort of so tight. You look at Solihull down in 17th from 32 points, and Eastleigh are 7th from 38. So, you know, there's not a lot of work really to be done to try and catch up to the top half and sneak into those playoffs. You know, you can, with games being played Saturday, Tuesday, sort of every week for the next month or so, you know, you can very quickly put runs together and get points on the board. So yeah, they'll be looking to come in and have that impact.
Yeah, interesting point you made about Mark Yates going back in there and on an interim basis, because we obviously we saw Wayne Brown leave non-league and go into the pro game at Colchester on an interim basis, and we spoke with Nick Robinson last week about players moving around the pyramid where there's only football being played at the moment at step one. And it'll be interesting to see how the shake-up and how all these things affect the start of the new season as to whether these people that have moved higher or moved across will end up back where they were at the start of last season, or whether they've been able to make the move permanently to a higher level.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting one. We've seen, particularly in recent weeks, that, you know, the number of Step 2 players going out on loan to clubs at Step 1. They'll absolutely sort of feel that this is their chance to prove that they can cut it at those levels. And, you know, it's a great opportunity. You know, the likes of sort of Stockport taking on a couple of players from Chorley. Notts County took on Lewis Knight this week from Bradford Park Avenue. Yeah, it's a really sort of great chance for them to showcase themselves at the higher level. And like you say, it sort of becomes a situation where these clubs who have had these players will probably be thinking, well, we'd quite like to have you sort of on a permanent basis next season. So an interesting one. I mean, you know, you can't sort of at all begrudge players wanting to play football sort of in these months and trying to do that. You know, managers might feel a little bit of sort of resentment that their players are sort of, you know, going off elsewhere and it may come back to bite them, I suppose. But at the same time, you always hear managers saying that, you know, they like seeing players sort of move up the pyramid and testing themselves higher and getting these sort of moves. So I think you can only really sort of say fair play and good luck to them, really, and see how things pan out.
Yeah, I mean, elsewhere in the show, we'll talk about the, you know, the need to take an opportunity as it arises and you know, snap the hands off of opportunity as it comes your way. But you do wonder, then what happens to the players that would have been playing at Step 1 that maybe are the players that have been furloughed, that because they're furloughed, they're not getting all the training that they should be. So are they then going to be not fit enough to start in Step 1 next year? Do they then drop down to Step 2, Step 3? And vice versa, those players that have made the step up will be taking advantage, I would have thought, of better training methods. And hopefully it has a positive effect across the whole of non-league.
Yeah, I suppose that is the other side of it, Tim. And it is a good point, really, in the sense that, you know, whenever sort of a new player comes into a club, it's usually at the cost of somewhere else, really. And yeah, like you say, there will be players sort of on furlough at clubs. I know Kings Lynn are... I've got a few on furlough and potentially more being put on it as well. And yeah, you do sort of wonder what the knock-on effect will be from that. Like you say, obviously, when you're not playing football for months on end, you know, you can quickly sort of get forgotten. You can, you know, lose your fitness. It's difficult to maintain that sort of match standard. And yeah, you know, you probably would worry if you are one of those players that, you know, it might have an impact on your career. So it's a good point and sort of worth remembering, really. You know, again, there's no real sort of perfect answer to it. I mean, you know, even in normal circumstances, only 11 players can play at one time anyway. So, you know, you're always...
Oh, who knows? IFAB may change the rules again this year. You know, stranger things have happened.
Well, yeah, you don't know. Yeah, bringing, you know, 12, 13, 14 players in, that might shake things up.
Maybe if they can be sponsored and it can be put on a video or something like that. As long as we don't get VAR into to the lower reaches of non-league football, I think we can all enjoy the game. Otherwise, I was discussing this week. If we had VAR in non-league football, there's a good chance that even for a 3 o'clock kickoff, fans wouldn't be leaving the stadium till about 9 o'clock. Could you imagine how many incidents would be caught up? And people, it really does. I'm not sure it's added to the game at the high level. Anyway, we want non-league football to come back and watch some games. You mentioned about clubs that have been furloughing players in Step 1 there, and obviously one of those Wildstone, Stuart Maynard, was the interim manager, but has been given the job full time and for quite a while as well.
Yeah, he's staying at the club until the end of next season. Obviously, he took over when Dean Brennan left the club quite suddenly a couple of months ago. And yeah, it's sort of first role, I suppose, as sort of solely a manager. But, you know, he did work very sort of closely with Dean Brennan. It sort of almost was a partnership in a way. And now he's got that opportunity. They've picked up two good wins in the last three games, and yeah, I think generally they're seems like they're happy with him. And you know, obviously as a former player at the club, he's sort of come full circle now. So good to see him sort of get the back in and a chance really to try and keep Wolverstone in the National League. Obviously, like I said previously, they may do that. By virtue of there being no relegation, but he's clearly sort of been backed for the long term, and we wish him well with that one.
Yeah, I like the fact that now all of our conversations have to be appended with subject to ratification, or maybe it'll be this way. One of those.
There's no certainty
at all. I mean, at step two, I understand that there's more meetings, maybe a final one perhaps tomorrow. I mean, you may have more news on this for the weekend, but it is. We spoke last week that it's dragging on and dragging on. We need an answer. I mean, if you find out this weekend as to whether it's a goer or whether it's not, it's another weekend that's disappeared that means that those games can't be played this weekend. They won't be able to be played midweek. And time just going on. We saw, I think, Kettering Town, the latest announcement of clubs saying that they won't be part of it. So I'm not even sure now what the numbers are if Step 2 can come back.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? I think it was always going to be a little bit of how quickly they could sort of get a proposal forward and have that in place. I think, you know, obviously the discussions are always sort of difficult when you're weighing up things like points per game and you know what team should start on and things like that. It becomes difficult, and yeah, it just sort of has rambled on really probably longer than they would have liked in terms of getting that proposal in. You know, it seems like it's there now and we're sort of at the final stage. But again, you know, we're at Thursday now and we sort of haven't heard anything. And then you go into sort of another week and then you still need to sort of come up with a fixture program if it was to get to that stage. You do sort of feel like time is running out a little bit. And like you say as well, Tim, I think the other sort of main point is sort of whether there's enough interest for it to happen. You know, when you see teams like haven't sort of pulling out here, you know, up near the top of National League South, and you know, very much an ambitious club wanting to make that next step. You know, when you see the likes of them sort of pulling out, you begin to wonder, you know, whether the interest is there really. And like I say, it's sort of longer sort of you don't hear anything. I know sort of no news is good news, but it's more the logistical side of things in this case. And yeah, you do wonder if you know, the time's ticking a little bit, but you never know. You know, it's got this far. You know, it's in front of sort of the right people now, so it's got a chance.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, we spoke so much about people washing their linen in public, and it has been conducted very civilly, and that they are having these meetings, and it does seem that everybody's getting on. So we should be pleased about that side of things. But it is the timings, I think, are the difficult things. And you know, a few weeks ago we were discussing the timings of funding being available to clubs and whether that would be available in time for clubs to be able to survive. The Winter Survival Fund, clubs made their applications, and I believe the majority of those were successful, and that has been able to help clubs across the pyramid to be able to sort of see through these difficult winter months, whether they've got football or not. But one of those clubs that apparently were turned down for a loan, Boreham Wood, who understandably, but not surprisingly as well, have gone public with that fact.
Yeah, an interesting one. You know, reading Danny Hunter's quotes that he put on the Boreham Wood website, you do sort of get a feeling it's kind of in between sort of rock and a hard place, really, in the sense that effectively Sport England were saying that the club is run well and sort of does the right things. So in that case, they're sort of not eligible for the loan, which, you know, you kind of think is a difficult situation, really. And that's what Danny Hunter was putting forward on his on what he was saying. You know, he was talking about the way he funded the club for the playoffs last season and paid all of his players and staff, you know, 100% of their wages throughout that, and sort of made sure they were safe and looked after and things. So, yeah, that all have come as a sort of bitter blow for them, really. You know, Sport England, you know, will have their reasons, and we've sort of looked into things in depth. But yeah, sort of a difficult one to see, really.
Yeah, and it also, yeah, we've got this big debate as to whether clubs should have to continue at step one, step two, you know, whether that comes about or not. And then you've got clubs applying for funding, which they know they're going to have to pay back. So it's not as if it's a free handout. So it's a, you know, they're applying for funding and then they still get turned down. It does make their position even more difficult because as we've already touched upon, you know, clubs are furloughing their players and bringing in alternative players that are cheaper. So the competition's not the same as it was billed at the start of the outset. And it's still nagging in my mind. I just hope that all this isn't in vain and we do get through to the end of the season. We do get a resolution to this season in the National League, and that there is a two up, two down into the Football League as we expect. But so many things have changed already this season.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we sort of talked earlier on, didn't we? Sort of everything is sort of followed by a sort of it has to be ratified, or this could still happen, or something like that. You know, there's still so much sort of up in the air, really, and that's been the case for the last 12 months. And, you know, you do long for sort of just some assurances on things and wanting to know what the future is, really. But, yeah, as I've always said, it's a difficult scenario to sort of plan through and come up with all these sort of different things. And, you know, I don't know, it's sort of kind of almost get a bit fed up with it sort of eventually, don't you? But, you know, this is sort of the real-life sort of scenario that sort of clubs are in. And, you know, it's probably easy sort of for me to just sit here and, you know, not sort of have to worry about those things. But, you know, these are what people like Danny Hunter and other clubs are having to sort of go through, really, and live through. And, you know, making sure that their clubs are here for next season and beyond. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not been an ideal situation for a long time at all, really. And, all pretty difficult.
Yeah, it is difficult circumstances. But we spoke last week with Nick Robinson on how supportive the sponsors of his league and leagues across the Trident leagues had been during the pandemic. And this week we saw Vanarama pledge their further support to the National League. I think it was a £4 million deal for a three-year extension to their title sponsorship. So, obviously, people still love the non-league game beyond just us fans and us journalists.
Yeah, actually, you know, that was a sort of really good bit of news this week, I think, wasn't it? Seeing that Vanarama sponsorship, you know, sort of followed on from the pitching in sponsorship the Trident League's secured recently. You know, it is actually really good to see that backing for non-league and its competitions. You know, I think maybe sort of in years gone by, you sort of always take it for granted a little bit, but probably in these situations now, you know, you really sort of do appreciate it. It is vital for these leagues and ultimately their clubs. That was great to see, and you know, for another long sort of sponsorship deal, as you say, £4 million as well. It's very much sort of a boost probably for the National League and non-league as a whole, because you know other companies may well look at that and sort of see it as a positive as well, and might want to get involved too. So definitely good to see that, and yeah, it's probably maybe almost sort of should be spoken about a little bit more, really, in terms of you know their backing and sort of what they're planning to do, really, for the National League in the years to come.
Yeah, and I'd imagine manufacturers of orange paint and dye must be very happy too, because it's a they must have a higher output than most. It's not a. I think that's been one of the one of the great things actually about the sponsorship, whether you like Orange or not, it has certainly made the Vanarama League a standout whenever there's some branding around. And you know, I've done a fair bit of branding in my time, and yeah, you don't have to love it. It just needs to work, and it does work
just
very
need
well.
To see it.
That's it. That's the important bit. And talking of seeing it, once obviously I've put all this show to bed, there's another column coming from me. I don't know whether you want to see it, but there will be will be something from me in the non-league paper hopefully this weekend. But what else can we expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, well, along with your views, Tim, plenty in there this week. As I mentioned, I spoke to Stuart Maynard earlier about his permanent role now at Wealdstone. Also spoken to Andy Todd, the former Premier League defender for the likes of Derby and Blackburn. You know, he's really sort of wants an opportunity in management and is prepared to dive into non-league to try and get that. So I spoke to him. Also Cobham as well, sort of an interesting story. They received their third bye in the FA Vars, in their FA Vars run this season after Stowmarket Town pulled out this week. So, you know, you're beginning to sort of feel that the stars are aligning a little bit for them on the road to Wembley and getting into the fifth round now, which is a club record for them. So I had a little catch up with manager Sam Mazer for Sunday's paper, and yeah, I've got plenty more in there as well. A little bit on Warwick and Rylands in the FA Vars, of course the Barnet and Solihull news. And we've also got all of the National League matches covered as usual. So, yeah, lots going on at the moment and in this week. And, yeah, really sort of bumper paper on Sunday. We're sort of struggling to get it all in at the moment. So, yeah, plenty of reading just for not only Sunday but the week ahead.
Well, that's good. And it's good that I don't need to append that with a potentially slightly different sentence just in case things change. It will be a bumper issue and there will be plenty of stuff to read, and it will be a good reason to get up on Sunday morning and keep your non-league dreams alive. David, thanks for joining us once again on the Non-League Football Show, and we'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
Top stuff. Cheers, Tim.
So that's it for this week. Thank you to all of my guests. Thank you to everybody for listening. You can find us throughout the week on social media. I'm there at Tim Fuel, Dave Anson at Dave Anson 78, and of course at Non-League Show, where on, particularly on Twitter, we will try and keep you up to date with the latest news, because I'm sure there's some more bubbling under about to be announced for the weekend. You can of course find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Take a look there too for the Non-League Gaffer Tapes, which if I ever find Dave Anderson again, we will be bringing back to you very soon. Stay alert, stay safe, thank you, and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA